It's Morning Edition on NHPR. I'm Rick Canley, and this is the New Hampshire News Recap. The federal government is back up and running after the shutdown, after Congress voted this week to end that shutdown. New Hampshire's Senators Jean Shaheen and Maggie Hassan helped negotiate the deal with Republicans that ultimately led to the government reopening. NHPR's Josh Rogers has been following the week's turn of events, and he joins us in studio now. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, Rick.
Let's start with where things are right now. What does the government reopening mean for people here in the Granite State?
Well, among other things, it means a return of funding for the low-income food benefit program known as SNAP. It means that federal workers, New Hampshire has thousands of those, are going to be back on the job and getting paid. And those who did work through the shutdown without pay, including people at the shipyard, will be paid back pay. And, you know, funding for the federal government overall is going to be secure through January 30th. So bottom line is that things are going to be returning to normal for at least 8 weeks. And we'll see if another deal is reached between now and then.
Let's see what happens come January. I actually want to play some tape here, Josh, from a Berlin woman who told NHPR's Jackie Harris recently that during the shutdown, she had to use money meant for bills to get her family food. So she's glad that senators finally did come to an agreement.
The good thing is now I have the benefits, and so I'll actually be able to get more food for the house than I normally do, and also be able to do Thanksgiving, because I wasn't going to be able to have Thanksgiving without the benefits.
So that's a voice of relief now that the shutdown is over. But the deal did divide New Hampshire's congressional delegation, who are all Democrats. So what's the rift between them?
Well, I think you can see it as a difference over tactics and of political temperament, perhaps. Jean Shaheen and Maggie Hassan are former governors. They're predisposed probably to keep the government running. Neither is facing voters soon, ever again, in Shaheen's case, and she's retiring, or until 2027 for Hassan. And, you know, I think that this was a tough vote for them in some ways. You know, both of their careers certainly indicate that they care about the health care issue that Democrats really sought to put at the center of the shutdown fight. But I think they concluded that reopening government under the terms of the deal was something better than the alternative. Clearly, there are pretty strong opinions on the other side of that. You know, in the House, U.S. House, Representatives Pappas and Maggie Goodlander and every Democrat running for Congress next year in New Hampshire disagreed with Shaheen and Hassan on this. And, you know, Democrats really did work hard to boil this whole thing down to health care and specifically these tax credits. These were supposed to be temporary. They were enacted during the pandemic to make health care more affordable under the Affordable Care Act. You know, there are some 20 million people across the country who rely on them. Thousands in New Hampshire. Polling indicates this is a good issue for Democrats, and that's where they sought to concentrate the fight. You know, Republicans want those to expire in the Senate. They'll say we can have a standalone vote on them in the House. I think that's going to be tough sledding. You know, we're going to see where this goes. I mean, this bill does do the things we mentioned earlier, which are, you know, important to citizens, squeaked out of the Senate, and, you know, this fight continues.
And the deal includes a promise that the Senate will vote on, as you said, extending the health care subsidies in December. It does not say those subsidies will be extended. Here's Senator Shaheen when I asked her Monday whether that vote can go the Democrats' way when Republicans have not supported the extension so far.
That's what we're going to work on, and hopefully the American people will help us do that by letting our Republican colleagues know that this is an issue for everyone. You know, we know that 76% of premium tax credit recipients are in states that Donald Trump won in the election. So it's in the interest of our Republican colleagues to address that.
So Shaheen, they're saying they'll work on Republicans, but have GOP leaders, Josh, indicated they're open to reconsidering these subsidies in any way?
Well, we'll see. I mean, the Republicans in the Senate have certainly been more open about saying, you know, we're going to vote on these as a standalone measure. I think the House might be a different thing. I mean, you know, Senator Shaheen and Democrats are banking on the statistics she read out that this is the expiration of these are going to predominantly hurt people living in so-called red states. I mean, it's also going to take effect here in New Hampshire. And, you know, the implications are a little unclear, you know, but it does seem clear that if these things go, if the expiration takes place, there will be people who aren't going to be able to afford health insurance, aren't going to buy it. And the ripple effects that will flow through the healthcare system, you know, it'll be interesting to see what that means. And obviously, politically, you know, quote, taking away people's health care or something that could motivate a deal. But we're a long ways from that, apparently, now.
Josh, are you seeing this rift developing in the Democratic Party here, the kind of the old guard centrists and sort of the new guard that are maybe considered a little more progressive here? Are we seeing that kind of play out right now this week in New Hampshire?
Well, I think we are. I mean, you have Jean Shaheen, you know, leaving the scene next year. I mean, she essentially built the modern Democratic Party in New Hampshire and created a model for what has worked, you know, deliberate, you know, liberal on social issues, moderate on fiscal matters. And, you know, there's a lot of frustration among party activists that we need something new. And, the Donald Trump is certainly fueling a lot of that. This is, you know, a moment of sort of no kings. There's kind of a taking it to the streets attitude among a lot of Democrats. And, you know, there are a lot of people this week who would say that they would prefer Democrats to fight on. I mean, but, you know, the implications of fighting on in the absence of numbers to get a deal, you know, that was going to mean suffering for people who are served by government programs. So it's a tough moment for Democrats and potentially a moment where we're going to see something different. I mean, the next elections are going to be interesting on that front. Do we get something different winning elections in New Hampshire than what has traditionally?
And HPR's Josh Rogers. Josh, thanks for coming in this morning.
You're welcome.
And thanks for your reporting. You'll find more of his work, by the way, always at nhpr.org. A new investigation from the New Hampshire Bulletin finds systemic abuse and neglect in the state's care system for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. The Bulletin's Will Skipworth reports that breakdowns in care in recent years have led to many instances of preventable harm, sometimes fatal. And Will joins us now in studio to share his findings. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Will, first let's talk about some of the challenges that adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities face and even accessing services in New Hampshire.
Right. So this is one of the most bureaucratic, complicated agencies I've ever reported on. You know, there are all these vendor agencies and there are these area agencies. And there are just so many rules and regulations they have to navigate to figure out what care they're entitled to, what kind of care they need, and how to get that care. So even getting that care, I think, is a real challenge just from the bureaucracy standpoint.
And they are entitled to that care in New Hampshire. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. New Hampshire, like many other states, has a developmental disability care system. This is paid for through Medicaid and other state and federal dollars. And it's stuff like residential care, behavioral care, you know, group homes or care homes and stuff like that.
And this is a separate issue for adults in New Hampshire. Oftentimes, there are many more services available for minors. Is that true?
Exactly, yes. So there's special education, and students with developmental disabilities are entitled to receive that up until they're 21 years old or when they graduate. And then once they get out of that, they then, you know, enter the adult world. And this is to help those adults that might need a little more care.
And sometimes those services can drop off at some point when they do enter that new age group.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a phenomenon called the disability cliff when they graduate or age out of high school, because the special education system is just so extensive and there's so many supports. And then when they get out in the adult world, I think there's kind of this rush of overwhelming things you got to do to become an adult, mm-hmm. You know?
Well, Will, you've spent months combing through court filings, state records, and talking with lawyers and families. How widespread is the abuse and neglect that you have found in New Hampshire's adult system?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the 2.5 years ending this past June, state records show there are 467 instances of credible abuse, neglect, or exploitation. And then I've actually been able to speak with some of the families, attorneys of the families, of some of the more horrific situations I've seen.
It seems like there's an awful lot of cases. I mean, that seems overwhelming.
Yeah, it's really tragic. I found, you know, sexual assaults. I found people who are beaten on a daily basis. I found, you know, a young man was found dead in the woods behind the care home he was living at. Some really, really tragic stuff.
What led to these failures? What do advocates and lawyers say that the state should have been doing differently?
One thing I hear over and over again is that there's just a complete lack of oversight, a complete lack of accountability. There's not many preventative measures. So in my reporting, I found a lot of instances where, you know, agencies don't appear to be properly vetted. Caretakers don't appear properly trained. And then when they discover one of these problems, when this goes awry, it doesn't seem like there are many consequences. It doesn't seem like there are changes to the system. You know, I had a lawyer who like really dug into this on behalf of her client. And she told me it doesn't matter how many incident reports you file about something bad happening if you don't do anything to correct the problem that led to that incident.
Where are these incident reports going?
So this is all overseen by the Department of Health and Human Services. There's the Bureau of Developmental Services. There's also a couple agencies that investigate. So there's the Office of Client and Legal Services, and then the Bureau of Adult and Aging Services. And when we get complaints, they're responsible for investigating it.
Is it a case where one agency is finger-pointing at another agency and nothing seems to be getting done?
Yeah, absolutely. That's something I hear a ton, is a lot of finger-pointing. So the state's basically designated 10, they call them area agencies. And these agencies are each responsible for a region of the state, and they're supposed to coordinate care for that part of the state. Those area agencies often subcontract to vendor agencies, and then the vendor agencies hire their own staff. And so they're like all these levels of the totem pole. And what I keep hearing is that every time something happens, everyone points to the member lower on the totem pole than them. And there's just little accountability, little responsibility, so much finger pointing.
And it seems like some of these cases that you've investigated have gone to court. There's been settlements, and then there's been gag orders put on families.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the truth. To be clear, these civil lawsuits, you know, they provide solace for the families. I was speaking to the folks at the Disability Rights Center of New Hampshire, and that's one thing they said, you know, they're important. They play a role. So do criminal cases. They hold them accountable and bring justice. But neither of those things forces the state to take a real deep look at what's going wrong in the system, where the system is failing, and commit to changes.
Systemic changes.
Yeah, systemic changes.
Well, Will, what is the state saying? Have they responded to your reporting at all?
So the leadership at the Department of Health and Human Services, they declined to be interviewed. I repeatedly asked three of the big officials who oversee the system, and none of them answered. I spoke to Kelly Ayotte on Wednesday through a press conference with a bunch of reporters, and she told me she read it. She immediately called her Department of Health and Human Services commissioner, and she referred some of this to the attorney general, and she says that she's committed to seeing change. I'm planning on following up and see whether that change happens.
The New Hampshire Bulletin's Will Skipworth. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your reporting.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
You can find his full investigation, by the way. It's a 3-part series. It's available right now at NewHampshireBulletin.com. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is NHPR.